And the House of Cards is definitely beginning to crumble today. We know it's happened. Everyone's talking about it. You're not being called a racist anymore now, or far right by talking about it because everyone's talked about it. It's true. It's 100% true.
We know.
Once you start selling your soul a little bit at a time, eventually there's nothing else. And you end up the person you were fighting against 20, 30 years ago.
Hello, and a warm welcome to the Reform Party podcast. Today I have a second returning guest, Mr. Nick Buckley, MBE. Hello, Nick.
Hello, thank you for having me again.
You're welcome. I've got a specific reason for having you today, as I think you have an inkling of, which we'll get round to discussing in a moment or two. But I thought before we did that, just have a quick chat about what's been happening, because it's been quite an interesting few days with regard to the rape gangs, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The House of Cards is definitely beginning to crumble.
Yes, you do get that impression that we're starting to win a few victories and starting to get there. And once you've got the mainstream on board with doing the questioning for you, it's all very well for you and I and others in podcasts and chat rooms to be discussing this sort of stuff. But once it's out in the mainstream, it really starts to we really feel as if we're getting somewhere.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt about it now. There's such a thing as Pakistani grooming rape gangs. 100%. The report says it, the Prime Minister agrees with it. We've got people now online, so celebrities, political commentators, news readers, we've got them now going, this is awful. I've been saying this for years about the grooming of girls and the Pakistani Muslim. It's like, no, you haven't. You were the person, a year ago saying it's racist to call them a Pakistani grooming gang, that everybody's raping children, that there is no ethnicity that's overrepresented. In fact, there's a government stat saying that most of the grooming gang pedos were actually white men. And in the Casey report, she actually references that and says, no evidence. Somebody made that up in the Home Office and got it out. And once that lie went out, people started using it. It's the House of Cards is coming down. And not only do we have to go after the pedos and deport the foreign ones and lock up the ones who are British born, absolutely. But for me, they're not the priority for me. The priority for me are the top politicians, the top people in the council, and the top police officers who cover this up and allow this to go on for decades and decades and decades. They'll have reasons. I was scared of being called racist. It was all about community tension. We didn't want any more riots. My boss told me to do it. I don't care what the excuses are. I want to see some top people in the dock, and if we can prove they either, turned a blind eye, anything like that, I want some people in jail. Jail. That's the only way we stop this, and it's the only way we stop tomorrow's atrocities and cover up from happening is by punishing people today. So civil servants today can go, have you seen what happens when you lie? Have you seen what happens when you turn a blind eye or when you lie? I'm not doing that because you end up in jail, you end up losing your pension. That's the only way that's the only way we become a better country.
I never thought I would hear people say the words Pakistani Muslim rape gangs on the BBC. Did you? I mean, it's just incredible. Having said that, I do think there's still efforts going on to minimize things. I saw a Labour woman on TV yesterday, and she's starting to say things like, if it was going on now, it'd be starting online. So therefore, we've got to come down on the online aspect of it. And she did, I mean, two or three other examples of ways where she was trying to deflect the attention from the fact of the Pakistani Muslim rape gangs.
Oh, absolutely. There would have been meetings in Starmer's office over the last month where they're going, we can't get out of this. We're going to have to look at this. We've seen the draft of this report and it's damning. What are we going to do? We can't cover the report up because Casey won't allow it. We're going to have to admit it. But how much do we admit? How can we contain this? This is an exploding bomb here. There's things we can do to reduce the impact, and they've already started doing reducing the impact. There's talk already that the National Inquiry that they've announced now won't be looking at police officers, civil servants and politicians and the Westminster. Well, that's what needs to be looked at. It isn't just the pedos, it's the people who covered up the pedos. Why did they cover it all up? For votes. For votes, that's why they did it. And if this report, if this inquiry doesn't look at that side of things, then we know this is just another cover-up. But even if it is a cover-up, even if they don't look at that side of things, we're one step further down the road now. They've admitted it. We know it's happened. Everyone's talking about it. You're not being called a racist anymore now or far right by talking about it, because everyone's talked about it. It's true. It's 100% true. We know it is. We've got the report.
Yeah, Starmer's jumped on his own far-right bandwagon, hasn't he? He's had to.
There was nothing else they could do.
I'm very sceptical of the chances of us really getting any big sculpts in this. I think the politicians and the police and the social workers, they all know how to cover themselves. The chances of you being able to pin anything on one specific individual, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think, no matter who heads the inquiry and so on, I just don't think it will happen.
It won't happen under this government. But this government has helped to break the dam. So I'm like you. I don't expect politicians to be in a dock under this government. But we have no idea what government's coming next and what their agenda is going to be.
And of course, that's what we're coming on to, isn't it?
Yeah. But before we finish this section, It wasn't that long ago. It was only a few years ago where we were told no such thing as Pakistani grooming gangs, no such thing. And then we got some reports, and then the blob, the elite, the government, regardless of government, this has been going on 30, 40 years. All governments are to blame for this. Heavily Labour, but Tories just as much. Then the next thing was, oh, yes, some rapes have happened and some terrible things have happened, but it's such a small, tiny number. You know, you can't blame one ethnicity for that. The numbers are too small. Then last year we got, we need to pay these victims compensation. And the government comes out with, there's too many of them. We can't afford it. There's too many of them. It was only a few years ago. There was none of them. And now we can't afford it because there's too many of them. Things have changed at such a fast pace. And the reason why it's changed is the internet, social media. And it's people who have not let this die. You know, the whole establishment wanted this conversation to die. And have put people in prison. Tommy Robinson. There's another guy in prison at the moment who said he's against Pakistani Muslim raping children in this country. He got sent to jail over the Miscommunication Act. So they've been persecuting people. Friend of mine, Raja Maya, up in Oldham. Yes. He's been arrested 3-4 times by the police for looking into this. And every case has been kicked out of court because there's no evidence. And when the police release that he's been arrested, this is how sneaky the police are, Greater Manchester Police. When he's been arrested, they put statements out like, Raja Maya has been arrested in connection with the grooming gangs. What does that mean to you? That means there's an Asian name in connection with the group. He's a pedo. Yeah. What they don't say is he's arrested for fighting the grooming gangs, for naming people in the grooming gangs, the politicians sat in Oldham Council. They leave that bit out and just say he's arrested, investigation into the grooming gangs. This was only a year or two ago. These people are sterling positions of power in Greater Manchester Police. I want them in the dock. I want them answering questions.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that's occurred to me over it is the fact that so many of the institutions have failed. The social workers, the schools, the police, all of our public institutions have failed these kids. But what occurred to me was that although that's almost what I would expect to happen, I don't trust these institutions in any case. And what it does is it makes the point more clearly that what has happened is the breakdown of the family. I mean, I was thinking, what if my daughter or my granddaughter were my daughter or granddaughter wouldn't be in that position because I wouldn't allow it to happen. And that's my, it's my, when I took on the responsibility of having them, then that's my responsibility. Now, where are all the other people who I mean, they need to understand that they need to take responsibility for their own families and not allow the state to interfere with them.
Oh, absolutely. Men allowed this to happen. English and British men allowed this to happen. It all started when men were either kicked out of the families or abandoned their families. It happens both ways, depending, you know, on personal circumstances. But that makes no difference. Once those children are still your responsibility as a man, you're still their protector and their provider, regardless of where you live. You should be living in a home, you know, but some people aren't. But that then doesn't negate your duties. And if you're a child and you don't have a father living at home with you, you've got a big sign around your head, and that sign says you have no natural protector looking after you. You're on your own. The most you've got is a woman looking after you.
Yeah.
Woman's not good enough in a dangerous world.
No.
You're targeted because you don't have a father. Your father might not be a violent man, but do you know what? Pedos and criminals don't know that. They just know you've got a father at home. And because you've got a father at home, there's potential violence there. Why would I risk potential violence when there's a child around the corner with no natural protector, who's easy meat, who's all alone, who's vulnerable? I'm going to go after them. Men let their children down in this country. Men on the same streets let their neighbours' children down. Because I tell you what, if this would happen in the 50s, you'd have had English men with baseball bats or cricket bats sorting this shit out themselves. They would have battered people, and that would have sent the message. I had a friend when I was growing up, an old man. He lived around the corner. I became friendly with him. And he knew the cousin. He drank in a pub in Gorton where I think it was the cousin or the brother of one of the Moors murderers drank. This guy had nothing to do with the Moors murderers. He wasn't involved in the case. He just happened to be related to one of them by blood. He got battered almost every Friday night or assaulted almost every week for having the wrong genes, for having genes that also were shared by monsters. And he got battered because people took it out on him, what one of his family members did. Roll on 50 years. We now have paedophiles living in streets. We know the addresses where they live. They use the same supermarkets as us. We know who they are. And they're safe to walk around the streets. They've already been convicted. The pictures are in the paper. We know who they are. And not one of them has ever been assaulted. Why? Englishmen aren't made of the same stuff Englishmen used to be made of half a century ago. Even though they're to blame, and you know they are to blame, and we need to punish them. And I know the establishment's also to blame for allowing to have a covering up. But for God's sake, English men and British men need to take some responsibility and say, why didn't I do anything about this? Why didn't I spend 6 months in jail for kicking the crap out of one of these people? Because that might have saved another dozen girls. Why didn't we do more? And that upsets me as well. And we all need to take that on board. We didn't do what we should have done.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I feel about it is that the media, whilst they're now talking about it, they're saying the words on television, they're not really joining the dots in terms of the background to it, in terms of the Pakistani mindset. I mean, I was speaking to somebody who just came out of prison the other day, and he was saying that in the prisons now, they have whole wings which are dominated by Muslim prisoners, and they get different food and everything else. He said, now, traditionally in prison, a paedophile in prison got a hard time. The rest of the prisoners don't like paedophiles and gave them a real hard time. He said these Muslim paedophiles, they're looked up to. They're actually lauded by the rest of the prison population. He says he'd never seen anything like it.
We've also got a huge issue with being converted to Islam in prisons, because you go to a prison, you're scared of being knifed and beaten up. So you join Islam, you know, you convert because you're then protected by the Islamist in the jail.
Yeah.
And you're right, these Pakistani pedos in jail aren't looked down upon. You know, it's like, well, they're only white girls. they're called cafes. You know, it's not a problem. You wouldn't do it to a Muslim girl, but it's okay doing it to them. But these people's wives, brothers, and sisters all think the same as well. It's a clan mentality. It's my clan against the world. And after clan comes tribe, then it might come religion, then it might become nation. None of these people have that connection to this land. This land is just better from where they came from. But they don't feel like we feel this is our land. You know, we've got ancestors over 1,000 years buried in this land. You know, our ancestors fought for this country and died for this country. These people haven't got that connection. And most of them are law-abiding citizens, but they're still not connected to this land. They came here because it was better from where they were born. They're nomads. You know, we have English nomads who are now moving to Dubai or moving to America. It's a better life for them. So we have these people in all cultures, not in all countries, but they're not good for this country because they don't put the country first. They put their clan first. But yeah, I mean, it's a our jails have a huge problem. And what this really boils down to is we've become too tolerant because we're now tolerant of people who are intolerant of us and our culture. So, but we're still tolerant to them. And it'll get to a stage where the intolerant will have too much power. And what happens to tolerance then when we're being ruled by the intolerant? And that's the line we're going down. Some people call it empathetic suicide. And that means we're so empathetic, we're so caring about these other cultures and these other people. We're so caring that we don't mind their killing us. We don't mind their coming to our country and bankrupting us. We don't mind their coming here, raping and killing and assaulting us. We don't care because it's not their fault. If we can only engage with them more, if they can only, we want them to be more like us and we've got to be sympathetic to them. It's like, no. That's what the dodo did. The dodo lived on islands and didn't know what a enemy was, didn't know what a predator was. So they would walk up to humans, to sailors, and the sailors would go, yep, pick it up. That's for tea. And we ate them all to death because they had no idea what an enemy was. And that's what we're doing in this country. We've had it too good for too long with no wars. That we think the natural state of playing the world is what we have now. We think all these foreigners are just like us, think like us, and want the same things as us. They don't. They're not completely different because, you know, we're still the same species, but, you know, they're very different to us. They have a different mindset. And I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just saying that's factual. They want different things to us, they think things differently to us. And we've invited them into our sheep pen, and we wonder why they're eating us because the wolves, and we haven't got it yet. Women, some women are beginning to wake up because women promoted a lot of this stuff because they're a lot more empathetic and pink and cuddly than men, and men went along with the women. But women are waking up now and going, sexual assaults have doubled, tripled the last 10 years. Rapes are going through the roof. And you look at the stats, Afghans and I think it's Somalians are raping women in this country 20 times the rate that a normal British person does. A foreigner in our country commits sexual assault 3.5 times more than the average British person does.
Well, I read the Casey report when it came out the other day, you know, just as almost as it was happening. And when I read it, I read through it, and I thought, I must have missed something here because I couldn't really understand what had panicked Starmer to the extent that he'd done this complete U-turn and said, yeah, we're going to have a national inquiry now. I couldn't work out what it was, but apparently there's a bit in there which states that the asylum seekers are committing offences, rape offences against kids as well. Now, that I think was must have been the bit that panicked him and persuaded him to announce the inquiry. Do you not think?
Yes, but there's also something else. There's a solicitor in London called Robin Tilbrook
Oh yeah.
who's put legal papers in to force Keir Starmer to answer why he's not having a national inquiry. So he put him in months ago. And the deadline for him to legally have to answer this was was the day the inquiry was announced.
Right.
Now, it might not just be, it might be a combination of different pressures coming, but he was going to have to answer to judges about why he's not initiating an inquiry. That would have been hard work. So it's pressure from everyone. Also, he also is being told, we're at boiling point. The UK is a pressure cooker. You've seen what's happened in Ballymena. It's going to kick off. You know, it's talk of civil war, important people talking about civil war. And he may be told, you've got to release a bit of steam here. If you don't release steam, there's going to be mass violence on your watch. And that's what he doesn't want. So it might just be a bit of steam.
I'm not sure it's not counterproductive, though, because all of this getting the what happened out in more and more and more people hearing about it, I think that's going to stoke things up even more. Do you know?
It will, but we all know about it anyway. And at this moment in time, he's not been in power for 12 months yet. At this moment in time, you'll see the pivoting. The pivoting will be Tories. Tories were in power 14 years, didn't do anything. Absolutely correct. They did nothing. But I think he's going to have survival strategies that are beginning to run now. He knew he had to do something. And you look at the distraction now, the blame game, and there's going to be a plethora of different things the government, the elite, Westminster start doing now to muddy the water, to pass the blame. This isn't the solution we want. This isn't the hands up, you caught us, we're guilty, punish us. This is, we've been forced to admit this. We don't want to admit anything else. And now we need to muddy the water so no one else can see what's going on.
Yep. Okay. Right. Let's move on, because I want to tell you, Nick, we've had a few chats now, and I think generally we see eye to eye on most things. But I have to tell you, I'm very disappointed in you. And the reason is that I read your Substack the other day, and in it you're threatening not to rejoin Reform UK. And I'm here to try and persuade you that that would be a big mistake. Do you think I'll be able to do it?
No, but there's a decent conversation we can have through this.
Mm-hmm.
For people who have not read it, what I've basically said is I've now resigned my membership.
Mm-hmm.
For these reasons. I have also said that I'm still going to vote for Reform unless something better comes along, because Reform are still, looking at all the parties, are still the best chance of some change. Not all the change I want, not everything I want, but no one ever gets everything they want. Right. So I'll still be voting Reform at the moment, but I cancel my membership because I don't think Reform have my view when it comes to immigration. And that was because of three statements by the three most powerful people in Reform within a 10-day period. And we had Richard Tice on TV being interviewed, stats were put to him that in 40 years, the UK will not be a majority white country. And he didn't want to have the conversation. And he said something like to the reporter, I think it was GB News reporter, you people are always going on about this, looking at those stats. You're always going on about this. In 40 years, I'll be dead. You know, what's the... And it's like, well, you might be dead, mate. And I'll probably be dead in 40 years.
My grandchild will still be alive.
If the UK is not a majority white country in 40 years, that's a huge failure. And I'm tired of people like you and politicians like you who don't take these things seriously. And I sort of let that go. Well, yeah, I don't agree with him on that. And then a few days later, we had the announcement of the new chair of Reform UK, David Bull. And David Bull comes out and goes, oh, immigration is a lifeblood of this country. Immigration, you know, we need immigrants. And it's like, what are you talking about? I was on an interview panel with him a year ago, live on Talk TV, I think it was. And he came up with that crap then. And I pulled him and said, we're not a nation of immigrants, like you say. We don't need, immigration isn't our lifeblood, like you say. You need to stop this pink and fluffy narrative, because we're not having it anymore. And he doubles down on it the second he becomes chairman. And I'm like, oh, who picked him as chairman? Who? There's so many better people. He's got some great ideas on the NHS. You should listen to him talk about the NHS. Some fantastic ideas. Absolutely agree with him on the NHS because he's been a doctor. He understands it. And then finally, we had Nigel Farage in Wales talking at a press conference about building houses and houses for Welsh people. And a clever reporter said to him, "What do you mean by Welsh people?" "Oh, Welsh people, people who have been here 5 years, paid taxes, not broken the law." It's like, they're not Welsh people. You're Welsh if your DNA tells you you're Welsh. Now, and I'm sure it doesn't matter what I think. Those three things in the space of 10 days made me realise Reform UK have some great policies, some things I don't agree with, but you never get that in any party. You know, some great things, no net zero, leaving the ECHR. They're against illegal migration, but who isn't against illegal migration? But I realised you're a pro-migration party. You're pro-legal migration. You want to control it better, but you're still pro-migration. You know, always talking about high skilled, we want high skilled. And that's when I realised I don't want to be a member of this party anymore now.
But listen to me, Nick. I mean, the point is that these people you're talking about, Richard Tice and David Bull and Nigel Farage, are not Reform UK. There are 230,000 members of Reform UK. That's who Reform UK is. I don't know what contacts you've had with your branch in
in Warrington.
Warrington, yeah. But I mean, we've got 150 members that regularly turn up at meetings and so on. That's Reform UK. Now, if you don't like what people are saying at the top, and some of the stuff I don't like either, and what you have to do is to get involved in the party and fight for your view within the party, so that and because there are plenty of other people who take a more ethno-nationalist view of immigration than the Reform UK does. So come and get involved in the party and fight for that strand. Fight if you think Rupert Lowe has got better ideas than Farage, then come and promote that from within the party. But what you don't do is to say, somebody said something I don't like, so I'm going to throw my toys out the pram and walk away. Because I'm disappointed from two points of view. Firstly, that you are the kind of person that Reform UK needs, obviously. And I'm sure that if you were to stay and work within the party, that very quickly you would push your way to a point whereby you would probably be appointed as a candidate for government. So we need you, but also you need reform, because you must understand that it's all very well doing podcasts and talking to people. You've fought as an independent before in Manchester and for the mayor, and you know how difficult that is. You need reform. You need the umbrella. You need the amount of clout that reform would give you in order for you ever to be elected to anything. And so therefore, you know that the only way you change things is through power, and the only way you're going to get power is through reform. So you can't leave.
I completely agree with you. Everything you then said is spot on. The only caveat is, I mean, the supporters of reform are amazing. They're all like me and you. They all want change. They're all sick of the country dying. They can see what's going wrong. They all want change. At this moment in time in reform, there's no mechanism for us to have the say we need to have the say. It's basically, I mean, I'm not criticising reform for this because brand new party, year old, blah, blah. You know, this is not a criticism. And for people watching this going, Nick Buckley now is going to be a critic of Reform UK. No, I'm not. After I wrote that article and resigned, I had no intentions of having a conversation because I don't want to be known as, oh, sour grapes. I'm not going to discuss reform after our conversation today. Because it's not for me to discuss reform. It's not for me to criticise other political parties. They need to do what they need to do and what they think is right. But it gets to say, well, we've all got red lines. And that was my red line. My red line is, as a party being led by the top, which is still a one-man band, it's a Nigel Farage show at the moment still, and that's not a criticism, but it's fact, that my views will not be welcomed. Because they know what they're doing. They've been Nigel Farage knows what to do. He's been wanting to do it for 30 years. Nigel Farage is trying to create the party we needed 20 years ago. And it would have been amazing if we would have got it 20 years ago. Nigel Farage is fighting the wrong fight. He's trying to improve the system. He's trying to deliver what we used to need. The game's changed. The country's changed. The country's dying. We don't need tinkering. We need some dramatic change, some dramatic policies. And he may get there. And he may get there. But at this moment in time, they've crossed my red lines. And you're right, I could have stayed. I could have stayed. I could have done a bit of brown nosing. Maybe I'd have got to stand as an MP. Maybe if they win the general election, maybe I would have become a minister of one of the departments. Fantastic. But deep down inside, what I'm saying to myself is, you're selling your soul, Nick.
Well, because we all have to compromise our principles to some extent. And that's, I mean, in a sense, that's what parties are about. I mean, I'm not a party animal at all. I'm very much an individual, and I don't actually like parties. But the problem is, if we're going to save this country, the only way we can do it is through a party. And at the moment, you can talk about Rupert Lowe and all the other far-right parties. None of them are going to go anywhere because they haven't got the start. They haven't got the apparatus. They haven't got what we've got. So we're the only game in town for somebody with your views to get a chance to implement them. So please, don't leave us.
I think, to be fair, I think the bridges are burnt. I don't even if I change my mind today, I don't think I would be welcome back.
Why not? Who would not welcome you back?
Oh, you're saying the abuse I've had online. I don't think I would be welcome back.
No, I mean. Well, can we leave it on an optimistic note then? If I can't persuade you to change your mind immediately, and I do think you need to think about it, what I've said, because we need you, and you need us. So it's a two-way thing. And if we can we at least leave it that you don't burn your bridges and you don't say I'm never coming back, and because I think you'll find that you one of the problems that you've identified, and you're quite right, is the lack of democratization within the party, and you're also right to say that that's because it's so young. Now that will change. So could we leave it that if the democratic channels are opened up, and I can see them actually within the party starting to open up already, once they're opened up again and there is a more coherent way whereby we can push our views up to the top and have them reflected, would you consider rejoining at that point?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've not said I won't join again. I've not said I hate reform. I'm still, I would say, still a supporter of reform, because they're the only game in town. And even if they don't deliver what I want them to deliver on the immigration side, I'd be a fool to not want them us to leave the ECHR, to cancel net zero, to look at spending across councils and government and then do a bit of a doge. This isn't about me. This isn't me cutting off my nose to spite my face.
Nick. I mean, I was speaking to Simon Evans the other week. Simon Evans is now the deputy leader of Lancashire Borough Council, with his hands on the control of, I think it's over £1 billion in budget. He's doing something real. He's actually affecting things. He's doing, getting rid of waste. He's actually going to change things for people for the better. Now, you could be doing that, but you can only do it within reform. So come back.
I think my role for the near future will be, I want to do to reform UK what UKIP was good at, and that's holding people accountable. If I, from the outside, can push reform down the path I'd like them to go down and understand what the people want, just like UKIP did and ended up with the referendum. What we need to move away from is thinking that any party has all the answers, that any leader has been sent to us by God. Nigel Farage, extremely talented politician, but he's not the Messiah. He knows more. And, you know, lots of things he knows more than me about, you know, more than politics than I do. It's not a criticism of Nigel Farage, but we need to ensure that he doesn't lose his way along this journey, because many politicians can get lost. Many politicians get corrupted by the system they're in. And that's what UKIP was really good at, was that long-term push.
I hear what you're saying there, but what I would say to you is that it's a lot easier to push it and to push it in the directions you want from the inside than from the outside. I mean, it
Not
really it is.
necessarily, but not necessarily. But we will see. I mean, this was the first party I ever joined. I joined 6 months ago. First party I ever joined. I've got no intention of joining another party. It's not like I'm now setting up to join UKIP
Oh, no,
or
no, no,
setting up to join the Tories. I'm not doing any of that. I wanted to join Reform, and I did. And for me, the red line, I just can't cross that red line.
no. Well, let me accept my failure then in terms of get you to change your mind. However, I hope that we can still be friends, and I hope that we can probably do some more podcasts together. And I
Of
mean,
course.
plenty of stuff to talk about.
Like I
And
say, I wish Reform well. I'm actually going to vote for it. If there's a general election tomorrow, I'm voting Reform. If there's a council election tomorrow, I'm voting Reform. So it's.
But that's all very well, but I want you to be mayor of Manchester or in charge of the Department of Energy. I want you to be doing something that your abilities make you capable of. And you know, that's that can, you can only do within a party.
And that's the paradox, isn't it? The paradox is how much of your soul do you sell in the hope you're going to do some good?
I
The
don't
good
think I've got
example,
I don't think I've got a soul anymore, Nick.
yeah. Well, a good example is let's look at Jess Phillips. Jess Phillips has spent her career being a gobby cow, which is, I don't mean that in a derogatory term. I've worked with lots of women like Jess Phillips, and having a big mouth gets things done, especially in local communities. She spent her political career mouthing off about what she wants doing and how she's going to look after women and girls and stop violence against women and girls. And she got to the top. She's now sat on the front bench, has a ministerial role, a fantastic pension, everything. What's she done with it? Because she's had to sell her soul to get there. She now cannot use the levers of power to do what she's always wanted to do, because she knows she has to do what she's told by Keir Starmer, by the blob, by the elite, by her party. And now I'd say to Jess Phillips, what was the point of your journey? What was the point of you getting there? Because once you start selling your soul a little bit at a time, eventually there's nothing else. And you end up the person you were fighting against 20, 30 years ago. And that journey is not for me.
Well,
And
I certainly wouldn't want that to happen to you, Nick.
but happens to many people.
Yeah, I
And
know.
unless we're constantly aware of it, then it happens. And that's why we need to have red lines. And I was quite willing to put up with a lot of the stuff in Reform, because they were new. You know, I never commented on the Rupert Lowe stuff. People with big personalities will fall out between themselves, and there only can be one leadership. I get that. I didn't have a problem with Zia Yusuf being brown Muslim. I thought it was a great having a patriotic Muslim man in the party. I thought that was fantastic. Didn't have a problem with the party not being democratic and being a Nigel show at the moment, because things take time to change. Didn't have a problem with the Reform being a limited company. Well, do you know what? That'll take years to change. I can imagine the hoops you've got to jump through to turn that into a proper democratic political party. Didn't have a problem with any of those
No,
things.
you know, you were talking there about, you know, Jess Phillips selling her soul, and I agree with you entirely. And there's a lot of souls that have been sold very cheaply in the Labour Party, but I'm not quite. I don't think I quite see the correlation between selling your soul and having a spokesperson for the party say something which you disagree with. In fact, I disagree. I mean, I thought David Boole was actually of the three that you mentioned, Boole was actually the worst. Because you know, to just have been appointed chairman of the party and then to turn around and say immigration's the lifeblood of the country. I mean, just from a political, it's so clumsy, it's a foot in the mouth, isn't it? How can you be so stupid as to say something like that? I have to say, I mean, you say you've met him before. I've not really met him. I've seen him quite a few times, and he's never seemed to me to be the kind of have the gravitas that the party needs at that kind of level, but. That's just me.
Well, at least he was honest. At least he was honest and told us what he thinks. And we don't, you know, let's give him some credit for that. We don't get many politicians who are honest. I've had so many messages since I resigned, telling me, Nate, you shouldn't have resigned. They don't mean it. They're saying that to make sure they're not called racist. But when they get into power, then I went, so you're telling me they're lying to the British public? So, and you want me to trust them because you're telling me, don't worry about it. They're lying to us all. We know what it's like. None of this makes sense. You know, I don't want my politicians to be liars, even if they're lying and I agree with them lying. I don't want politicians to be lying. And I don't think they are lying. You know, all three men will be honourable.
There's a balance to be struck, isn't there? You know, because I mean, I could say certain things for quite now that I believe. And I know fine well that I could never sustain those things within the party because it would just be so unpopular that it wouldn't work. So you have to, everybody has to draw a line and have compromise in some way this with what you actually believe. And that you can describe that as selling your soul. But I think to have three people say things that you don't agree with, and in some cases, and I didn't agree with them in a lot of cases, then that's not enough. It's not enough to leave over.
It was enough for me. It was because it was the three most important people in the party over the same topic, and it was like, no, I just can't stay any longer. And I'm not a party person, you know. It's hard being in a party, and respect those people who are in parties, who drive it forward, who do all the hard work. And that's all the reform people I've ever met, constantly doing hard work, and they've got the best interests of the country. This isn't about me leaving them. This isn't about me going, I'm leaving, therefore you should all leave. And if you don't leave, you're idiots. I've never said such a thing. I never would say such a thing. I think, you know, reform are needed. People should stay in reform. And I don't tell people what they should do. I don't tell people who to vote for. I don't tell people what parties they should be in. That should be an individual choice for them. I just only can make the choice for me. And this is politics. There is no simple answers. You know, it's a dirty business. And it's very difficult. But I would say for people in reform, and regarding quite a lot of the abuse I've had, that is like water off a duck's back. Who cares? Abuse me. I've had it for 5 years now. Who cares? But I'd like to say to those people, have a think about why you're supporting reform. Because first of all, you're coming across a bit like a left-wing lunatic, as in, they're fantastic. They do nothing wrong. I don't want to listen to anybody else with any criticisms of reform. Because what you really need to be is a supporter of reform, a member of reform, and do what you've just said. Be self-critical and do it from the inside. And make sure your leaders aren't taking the party down the wrong path. Making sure they're doing the right things and hold people in power to account. Because that's how the Labour Party's failed. That's how the Tory Party failed. Because their members were too ideological. And wouldn't hold anyone to account and wouldn't criticise and wouldn't self-criticise. Be self-critical about what you're trying to achieve and still support reform and still work for reform. But avoid being a sycophant. Avoid being brainwashed into, this is the only way we're going to save this country. And da, 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 da. And it may be, but do you know what? You don't know if that's true or not. And we need to be better citizens and we need to be better members of political parties, and we need to do our job in that party by holding the leadership to account. And I'm sure many reform members are trying to do that, and good on them.
We will. I mean, you know, you take a couple of examples that of things I've not been happy with that have happened. You know, he said he wants to do this, rescind the two-child benefit cap. I'm not in favour of that. He said he wanted to, it was all the fuss about the winter fuel allowance. I don't think there should be a winter fuel allowance. But I'll probably be in a minority. Well, I'll be unpopular if I were. And that this is part of the problem we've got to with politics. Now, you can't say anything that's true if it's unpopular, because you won't get elected. And if you don't get elected, then, you know, you can't do anything about it. So you have, and you were saying, you know, you should always tell the truth. But you have to sometimes be economical with the truth in order to achieve your objective. And without power, we can do nothing.
Yeah, there's a difference between being economical with the truth and outright lying. This Labour government have shown us that they outright lie. They lie to your face. Even they even know that you know they're lying, and they don't care. Mm-hmm. They will just lie and lie. I've never seen a government like it. You know, the Tories would lie to us, but they would dress it up. They would twist the truth. It was still a lie. And then, you know, but this government have went, we know you think we always lie, even when we're not lying. So do you know what? We might as well just lie all the time because you think we're lying anyway. The blatant lies that they've come out with is absolutely shocking. We had that Labour politician on, was it Newsnight the other day or whatever it's called now, where he said most of the illegal immigrants coming on the boats are women and children. And it's like talk about a barefaced lie, but they've been doing it for so long. And I also know why they're doing it. They're doing it because they're not trying to win me and you over. They're trying to keep their base, a very small base, happy. And that small base believe their lies. So they're just trying to keep their base happy, knowing everyone else knows they're lying. Yeah. And that's because we're splitting into tribes. That's because you can win a landslide now on 33% of the vote, 20% of the electorate. You can win a landslide. And until we tap into the 40% of people who don't vote at general elections, that's where the future of the country lies. The 40% of people who have given up and I'm not sure anyone's really going after them like they should be because they're the kid makers.
I think we are starting to get there with those 40%. And I mean, although you say, you know, Labour have lied to us and they've got power through it, I agree with you. But I think we both know there will be a reckoning in 3 years' time. Because you know it's impossible to see that we know everything's going to be worse by then, economically and every other way, and so in 3 years' time there's no possibility that Labour will get elected again. There's no possibility that the Tories will come back because they're almost extinct already. So and in a sense it's been a bit easy for us, and I worry about that sometimes, that with all the absence of any obvious competition, we should actually be doing better than we are, I think. You know, okay, we're doing, you know, 30% in the polls or getting around there. But with the considering what the other parties are like, I'm not sure we shouldn't be doing better than that.
Yeah, it's a very good point.
And the only
we're still not sure how popular reform are or how much of that vote for reform is we still despise Labour and Tories. So there's lots of unanswered questions out there. But all reform can do is ensure that they're a better party and that they're listening to the people. And that's what... there's no point winning an election. There's no point reform winning and being a slightly better version of Labour and the Tories. There's no point of that because that'll just damage respect in politics even more. We need a peaceful revolution, and hopefully reform are pushing some of that.
And I think, you know, some of the things that we've talked about the one that keeps cropping up is Tommy Robinson, isn't it? Because, you know, and Nigel took a look at it and said, there's no way, and this goes back to UKIP days when, you know, he joined UKIP and split it up. Nigel's taken a look and said, we're not having any involvement with them and so on. And we lost a lot of support from some of the right because of that. Now, that's not to say that when we get power, that Tommy Robinson could not come into the frame again. Because once you've got power, you can do anything you like, as Starmer has shown. So I wouldn't you know get too worked up about internal factions or even Rupert Lowe. You know that he could come back, but he wouldn't. I don't think he could come back until such time as we have taken power. But then I think there could be a road back for him. So anyway, who knows? These things are all in the future.
Oh, politics is fluid. You know, anything can change. And politics, like you say, is all about negotiation. If the difference was, if it come down to reform being the next government, but losing it by one seat, and Rupert Lowe wins his seat again, there's a deal to be done there.
Well, I don't think there would be any question there would be a deal done.
Because, and this is politics. And that's not a criticism, but this is politics. This is horse trading. Mm. And, you know, so yeah, it's politics, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I'm quietly confident that we've got enough people with the right views within the party. And as I say, the only way I think we can not succeed is if one of the leadership keep opening their mouths and shooting themselves in the foot. And, you know, that damages us to a large extent. But to be honest, I don't think that's going to happen. I think, you know, that we have enough momentum that we're going to keep going and we'll get there.
Oh, reform are here to stay. Reform are here to stay. It's not like it's a flash in the pan and come next election, next general election, you know, you collapse back down to 7%. No, okay. Reform are here to stay. And 2-3 years is a long time. Anything can happen in that. But most politicians and every politician in the UK at the moment are envious of reform, are going, I wish we was in their position.
they in Wirral, we were speaking to the Labour people the other day, and they said they view us as unstoppable at a local level. You know, in 2 years' time, when we get our elections, that, you know, they can't stop us, which is interesting.
No, absolutely. And I wish well all the supporters of reform, all the members in reform, and keep fighting and keep doing what you're doing. And but also make sure you have red lines. Make sure you're not going to go along with anything. You know, there has to be a line you won't cross.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody's got the red lines. I mean, I've left things in the past because of red lines. But until the democratic structures are properly formed within the party, which they're not at the moment. Once they're formed, if you then can't have influence, if you can't say, you know, have a vote in the branch that we don't want this, and that nothing happens, and they keep forcing it through, it's tricky. But you know, if we get to that stage, then that might make things. But we're not there yet. We have to trust that these things will come in due course.
Yeah, and there's a very good chance they will.
Good. Well, look, thanks very much for that.